You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Team Never Quit podcast is sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union. Navy Federal Credit Union helps you take control of your finances after the holidays. Learn more at NavyFederal.org.
Never quit. Team Never Quit Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. Thank you guys so much for coming back every single week, listening to the show, sharing it everywhere you share it, following us on YouTube. It means a lot. Marcus, what's up, dude?
You know, it's holiday season.
It is.
That's a big deal around here.
You got big, big plans for Christmas? Have y'all decided what you're doing yet?
Oh, yeah. Well.
Kind of.
I know what my job is to bring the holiday spirit. When December 1st... when that sucker rolls around. Actually, now it's before Thanksgiving. Have you ever noticed that you go, let me back it up. My whole New Year's resolution is to keep my spirit, see how long I can keep my Christmas spirit all the way through the year. And if I can lose it the second day or the third day, or if I can carry it all the way through. But have you ever noticed that when the year kicks your butt, and then when the holiday season rolls around, you got Halloween, which everybody dresses up like goblins and ghouls, because that's kind of how you're feeling at the end of the year.
Yep.
And then you got Thanksgiving, where all the family gets together, and that's chaos and pain. I mean, everyone's arguing, and it's just this melting pot of wonderfulness, I think. You know, yep. I love it. And then immediately following that is the nicest time of year.
That's, I never thought about it that way.
So, I know, I hadn't either. But as I stepped back and I looked at it, I was like, man, no matter how much my year kicked me in the face, Thanksgiving always made it, kind of stepped it off, even the arguing there. And then that next month, holiday season, actually through the year, is kind of the best time. So I enjoy this part of it.
Well, I've got a crazy Patreon question for you. I say it's crazy. It's not that crazy, but here it is. What is the weirdest thing you have ever eaten? I've been thinking about that, man. I don't know. Intentionally? Accidentally?
Weirdest thing.
Weirdest thing.
Elijah, you got anything on that one? I mean, like, fear factor kind of, like, bugs and snakes and all that stuff like that? Is that considered weird? Because I do that. That's just survival. And, you know, rattlesnake tastes good. Alligator tastes good. Weirdest thing I've ever eaten.
Weirdest thing.
I had a chocolate covered cricket once.
Nah, that didn't count. Swallow bug driving down the road.
Yeah, it's a
without the chocolate.
My first time I ever rode a dune buggy.
My first ever oyster was with Brad and Melanie's family on vacation. And I thought that was the weirdest. I know that was the weirdest thing I had ever eaten at that time of my life. I've since been cultured and enjoy oysters, but at the time, that was definitely the weirdest thing I'd ever eaten.
I don't know. The military gave me some food and some pills that made me grow real tall and gain a lot of weight and turn mean and it weird stuff up. And so probably something like that, I guess. I don't know.
Is there? In all your adventures overseas, was there ever a type of food or in a certain country that you remember that was really weird or gross or anything like that?
God, man, I tell you what, a goat cheese, if I smell that now, and it's not a, I don't know what happened, but I guess I do. So when in the mountain after I got, the villagers rescued me and they had me in there, they had that flatbread. So when I was hungry, they'd bring me the bread, but every now and again I'd get, they would bring me a piece of meat and some, and it was in the middle of warm goat's milk.
Oh.
I came in that and I was, my stomach was just messed up.
Oh,
man.
Dude.
And I,
gross.
Yeah. I couldn't even keep it down. As hungry as I was, I just, for whatever reason, and ever since then, that doesn't sound weird, but I mean, that has a reaction on me.
That'll
man.
Put your stomach in knots. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Elijah, did you say you had one?
I really don't. I'm kind of a picky eater, so you know, I'm a barbecue guy, but that's not really weird food. But,
yeah, no. We love barbecue down here.
Oh, yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for the questions. Sometimes we do a great job answering them. Sometimes, you know, we just don't know where to go with it. But patreon.com/teamneverquit, you can ask yo questions. You can get exclusive access to behind-the-scenes content, some bonus swag, a cool challenge coin, all kind of other great stuff. We have got a great guest in store. Elijah Stacey is the founder of the 501c3 nonprofit Destroy Duchenne and the author of A Small If. He is determined to advance gene editing and gene therapy to save his life, his brother's life, and the lives of thousands of people around the globe who have been diagnosed with DMD. Elijah, welcome to the show, man.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, brother. Usually most people come on here got a little age on them. You're still kind of young. So for me and you to be sitting in the same room together says a lot about you. One, congratulations. I'm sorry you had to go through all that. You're going through it, but good job for going through it, because that's what separates us from everybody else, man. Those of us who got to kind of take the weight and push through it. And I've heard a lot of stuff about you, man. I'm interested in learning more. So explain to me exactly what it is you're dealing with.
Yeah. Thank you. So when I was 6 years old, I was officially diagnosed with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And what this disease is it's a muscle wasting disease. So as time goes on, you lose muscle function. So when I was about 5 years old, we noticed I was walking on my tippy toes. I was not able to keep up with my peers. I was falling to the floor frequently. I wasn't able to play sports and just anything like that. So we noticed that there was something wrong with me, right? And we just didn't know what it was. So went to tons of doctor's appointments, you know, all these adults, you know, because I'm a little kid, I'm five. And they're all, you know, talking to me, you know, can you do this? You know, I remember one of the stories that really stuck out to me is my doctor, he wanted me to take my clothes off and just remain in my underwear. And, you know, as a five-year-old, that was kind of like embarrassing, humiliating.
Sure.
But you needed to see how I walked, right? Because that's a real common way to see if you have Duchenne or not. And, you know, we did blood work.
Did you know what was going on? I mean, at five, what were you thinking?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I didn't really know. Like, people would always, like, look, when I was five or six, people would come up to me all the time and say, you know, why do you walk like that? Some people make fun of me, you know, why are you, you know, walking on your toes, you know, stuff like that. And I never really had an answer for people. I never could say like, I have this disease or whatever. So I had no clue. But people were always asking me, you know, what's wrong with you? So I didn't really know what was going on, but I knew that there was something different about me. Cause you know, I was,
you mean
just
you just like pronate that you were on your toes all the time.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You walk on your tippy toes. The reason why is because you lose muscle function. So my calves are super large, right?
I was going to ask you, and I didn't mean to jump in the jokes too early, but if you got a good sense of humor about it, I was like, man, because we walk around our calves or our toes to make your calves huge.
Yep.
So you're one of those guys, right? That could fill up some rubber boots. Your calves are so damn big, like look like catfish bellies.
No, for real. They're right? Really, really large.
Why is that? Is it the Achilles tendon? Is that where it starts?
Well, I mean, it's all over the place, but the reason why is because, you know, you lose muscle function, right? So you're losing muscle. And in order to compensate for the muscle loss, you're going to walk on your toes because you still want to function, right? You still want to walk. So
right.
That's what your body just kind of does with this disease. You're going to do whatever it takes to walk. And so then it just naturally happens. But all boys with Duchenne, they'll walk on their tippy toes. It's one of the most common things that you see. So yeah, I have like really, really large calves. But yeah, I didn't really understand what was going on, but I just went to all these doctor's appointments, missed a lot of school, got behind in school, and that became a whole other challenge as well. And it didn't seem fair because it's like I have to do all this makeup work after school, even though I'm going to doctor's appointments, you know. And so just a lot of things happening early on in my life. And
so this is obviously back when they couldn't pick that up that fast, because you said if walking on your tiptoes was a common sign of that, there's none of the doctors could pick that up right away. Or you did find out right away?
Well, they picked it up, but you know, you had to go through like the official like diagnosis sure. process right. or whatever. So like they eventually would do a muscle biopsy on me. And it's kind of a funny story. My parents tell me, oh, we're going to, I think they told me that we're going to like, I think they told me we're going to Disneyland, or they said something like that. And so I thought, oh, okay, you know, so we're going to the hospital, and I go inside there, and you know, I realize, oh, we're actually at a hospital. And so then I go under, they do the surgery on me to, you know, take a piece of muscle out of me to test it. And I remember after I woke up and I stood up out of the bed, and I was like, I can walk. I'm fine. I can walk. I'll show you right now. I can walk. Because I knew that they were questioning that there's something wrong with my walking. And I didn't like when people would tell me, oh, yeah, you can't do this or that. It gives me like great motivation to prove them wrong. Yeah. And so I was like a 5-6-year-old kid, you know, I'm standing up in the hospital room saying, no, I can walk, and trying to prove it. And they're like, they have the nurses come in, like, you know, you need to calm him down, get him, you know, to chill out and lay in the bed. You know, you can't be walking right now. You're going to like ruin all the, you know, the stitches in your leg or whatever. So that's when I was officially diagnosed, though, was when I was 6 years old.
So what are the protocols for that?
Like, what do you do? Like, what do you do from there? Like,
yeah, I mean, when finding out one thing that's kind of just putting a label on something that you knew was going on. So what is it that you do from there?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty terrible news. You'll hear a lot of parents say, basically it sounds like a death sentence, right? Because it is, it's a fatal disease.
Most everybody dies though, man. So, I mean, looking at it from your perspective, from what you've done, people always say that. People always say, oh, it's the death. It's like, man, we got to die anyways. You got to get out of here somehow. If you're just putting the straps on me, this is how you're doing it, then that's how we're going to do it. It's usually doctors that tell you that crap. You know what? I mean, they're the ones that feed lines, and they fed you that line, and you didn't buy it.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, my family and I, so the way my parents have raised me and everything, I have to say, like, they're amazing parents. I couldn't have asked for better parents because, you know, they never ever went, oh, you know, you're going to be in a wheelchair and you're disabled and whatever. But instead, you know, my dad's was a head football coach. So I was raised on the football field. So I had like that athlete's mindset of always trying to get better and improve yourself and whatever. So they really ingrained that into me as a little kid. They did it with my other brothers that have this disease too. And for me, I never took it that way. But, you know, the protocol is, you know, you start to take a steroid, which is called prednisone. And so what that's supposed to do is stop like inflammation with the disease and just try and give you more strength, more energy, whatever.
Yeah.
But it has terrible side effects, which suck. But you know, you have to deal with it anyways.
What are the side effects of prednisone?
So like one of them would be like you retain a lot of water, you gain weight, mood swings, chubby cheeks, right? So stuff like that, which suck. But I did you know, that's basically it. That's all they basically have to do. I mean, you could do stretching, you could do like some light working out here and there, but there's no cure for the disease as of right now, but I'm hoping to.
So tell me explain to me what it does. Like, so the minute you find out about it from when you're born, and is it affecting you other in what ways? So other than walking on your toes, cause you say you're a football player.
Yeah. Well, so my dad was a head football coach. And so, you know, I throw the football around all the time at practice. But what the disease does typically, right? So you walk on your toes when you're a little kid, right? And you fall to the floor a lot. You're getting weaker in your legs. All right. That's basically the first thing you go.
So what is they grow so strong. Your calves grow so strong that it makes your legs weak?
Well, it's just because you're overcompensating with another muscle. So you're really working the muscles that, you know, your calf muscles, because you're walking on your toes.
Right.
But eventually your whole legs are going to give, because the other parts of your leg are going to get weaker as well.
Okay. So is that what causes the rest of the leg? Is that what causes the rest of the leg to get weaker? Is just the fact that you're walking on your toes primarily? There's nothing in there that's eating up the muscle fibers or tendons or ligaments or anything like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So no, actually the disease, it's a muscle wasting disease. So like the actual muscles are dying.
Yeah, right. So from lack of use though.
What did you say?
Are they dying from a lack of use, or is it from something the disease is eating away itself?
Right. No. So it's actually the disease is actually, so inside your myocyte cells, right, your muscle cells,
right,
you have this basically pillar-like structure, which is called dystrophin.
Right.
And what that does is it upholds the cell membrane. So like it's like the pillar that upholds the roof. And what happens is if you don't have that roof, then a bunch of things are going to come into the inside of the house and destroy the inside of the house.
Sure.
So with patients with Duchenne, they don't have dystrophin. They don't have that pillar. So every time we contract our muscles, that roof like wiggles and it rips. And so then, you know, like, let's just say like rain and a bunch of things come inside the house and it damages the house and it ends up destroying the whole house. So that's what happens with a patient with Duchenne.
It's the myofiber that you that contracts. So basically what you're saying is, and for people to understand, is the muscle kind of looks like a Twizzlers, right? And when there's a sheen that goes over the top of that, the muscles, the fibrogen, I can't even remember the name of it now. It's been a while. But what you're saying is you don't have the structure on the inside of that to hold that out. Wow. And that's just from deterioration from the disease in itself limits your ability to work those muscles out. So they deteriorate and that causes more deterioration, right?
Yeah. No, definitely.
So what's physical therapy like? Yeah. That's what you're trying to compensate for, right? A lot of, you have to work the upper legs.
Well, so I did a lot of physical therapy later on in my life. But that's just, you know, to remain flexibility, you know, because you don't want to get too stiff. You don't want to get too tight, stuff like that. And to maintain the strength that you do have, because like, you know, like you said, like it can get even worse if you don't use the muscles that are still available to use.
Right.
And so try to do that. But I guess going back to your original question, like if you look at a whole life of a patient with Duchenne, you know, they lose mobility to walk around the age of 11. So when I was 11, that's when I went to a wheelchair full time. And that's a lot of adaptation you're going to have to make, you know, getting out of bed, getting out of, you know, going to the toilet, the shower, getting into your car, the way people are going to view you, everything changes, right? When you're like 11 years old, going into a wheelchair. And then in your later teenage years, you start to lose mobility in your arms as well. So, you know, you went from, you know, for me, at least I was throwing the football around with my dad, playing basketball in my wheelchair with my friends at recess, stuff like that. And you know, you're going to lose that ability as well. And then what happens is, when you're in your later adult years, you start to experience trouble breathing and trouble with your heart. And the reason that is because your diaphragm is a muscle and so is your heart. And so those get attacked as well. So that's basically the whole bird's eye view of a life with Duchenne.
So when you found out about it, I mean, a lot of times when people get news, such as like the doc said, like a death sentence, but either way you look at it, you had to live through it. Who pushed you in that direction? And you said that your brother, it's passed down with your siblings, right? Does your father have it?
No. So my parents don't have it. It's X-linked. So my mother carries it, but they don't have the disease themselves. So they
grandparents, your grandmother, anybody?
We looked in our family. We didn't find anything there.
You're the only y'all are the first ones that have it.
So we think so. I mean, it could, you know, we think so. I don't know exactly the specifics on that.
It's an X variant, right?
Yeah. So it's X. It's X-linked.
Yeah, so you're an X-man. That's all right, man, because I call them our generation and all the guys like us X-men. And we're different than everybody else. Everyone says that when you have a disability that somehow hinders you in everything that you do, but it's actually not a disability. It's a distinct ability. Because once you lock one thing down, everything else has to open up and grow, especially living down here because of how hard it is. Everything else and everyone else is trying to survive. So when you're born with a handcuff on that's put on early, man, you just learn how to your instincts, you learn how to thrive and survive in other ways, in other capacities. And right now, this whole place is going through a transition. You're still really young. I mean, what you learn every day, I can't even imagine. So to stay motivated like that, I mean, you got your brothers with you. Is everything you learn, y'all passed down? How many of y'all close?
I mean, we're a very, very close family. What you said is exactly right. You know, you definitely develop so many types of mindsets and attitudes towards adversity, which is amazing, which I'd love to get into. But my brothers, you know, my little brother, Kai, he's 14. He has the same disease as me. He's in a power wheelchair as well. And then my other brother, Max, he was 14, but he actually passed away in 2019. And so he's no longer with us, but he had Duchenne as well. What's interesting, though, is my older brother, Will, he does not have Duchenne at all. He's completely healthy. He's actually in the military. And so he's completely healthy. And the reason why is because, you know, so it's X-linked, you know, the father is going to decide the, you know, the biological sex of the offspring. And so, you know, so it's a 50-50 chance, right, coming from the mother. And yeah. So he got the good one, and we got the bad ones. But that's how it turned out.
Not bad. Different.
Different. Okay. Yes.
That's what it was
yes.
explained to me in my family. And the program that I went through and the way we were trained, man, is every crazy son of a gun that comes through our pipeline, man, is just an X-Men, an X-Factor. Something different about them. Somebody explained to it to me the other day, man, we're the guys with the pure hearts and the wicked minds. And that levels us out. And if you got that Professor X kind of mentality, you're in the wheelchair, I can only imagine how sharp your mind is. Because when they start taking your body away from you, because that's what your body is. All your body is designed to do is carry your mind around to entertain that. It's just a vessel, period. And I got buddies that have wheels all the time now. And then I got buddies who spend most of their time in a chair, on wheels somehow, even when they have their legs. It's all how you look at life. With the technology we have this day and age, man, don't be surprised. You're not going to be walking. You'll be back up on your legs walking around. That Iron Man suit and all that stuff coming out, that's a definite thing. So keep going, man. Tell me how you got to right now. What started with the book?
Yeah, so like you said, you know, I learned a lot through all the adversity that I went through. So I wanted to write a book. I started actually writing it when I was 16, finished writing it when I was 17. And then I published it this year, and I'm 20 years old now, you know, there's whole process or whatever. But I wrote the book because, well, I think I could really help people overcome their adversity. And that's what I'm all about, right? So what I say is this, is my wheelchair is symbolic. My wheelchair symbolizes suffering. It symbolizes all the, you know, the different pain, emotional problems, you know, depression, anxiety, whatever somebody's going through. Because suffering comes in all different types of ways. And I believe suffering is inevitable. Everybody's going to suffer at some point in their life. Right. If they're not suffering now, they're going to suffer one day. So, you got to be ready. You got to be prepared for it. Right. And so the way I see it is the wheelchair symbolizes suffering, but I sit on top of my wheelchair. Right. So I'm symbolizing that you can overcome your adversity every single day. And I'm trying to show people that, you know, when I was in high school, me going around or whatever, like just literally just seeing me and how I live my life and how I'm still trying to cure my disease, write a book, public speaking, trying to do great things for the world, not letting the disease or wheelchair hold me back. Right. I think that sends a really powerful message that people need to keep going and that they can be resilient, that they can overcome their suffering, and that you're not going to take no for an answer. Right. It's just you're going to win. Like something that I'm huge on is like you got to set your mind on something already. So like for me, I have my mindset on being great no matter what. So if it's like if there's a million things coming my way, I'm going to find a way to still make it happen. Like I don't care how, you know, in fact, I actually the type of guy who I actually get fired up the more adversity that I'm going to get coming my way. Cause then it's like, okay, this is even a harder challenge, but it's going to make the victory even better. Right. And so it's just like that fighter, you know, mindset, that fighter attitude. And that's what I try to put inside the book. And that's why I wrote it, you know, like there's 13 life lessons in the book at the end of each, you know, chapter. And those lessons are things that I've learned that I think other people can learn as well. So like how to live a more fulfilling life, how to overcome adversity, just how to be like a better version of yourself that's better equipped to deal with the burdens of the world, to deal with the challenges of the world.
So explain to me, talk to me a little bit about that. Because when you said your wheelchair, it's a sign of suffering. It is. It's movement through suffering. It's up to the point to where you're moving so fast and you're back up to speed with everything else that it's not suffering anymore. Because, I mean, you're successful. And at 19, I mean, you've done more. I'm this kid, right? Elijah, man, you've done more in the life you've been around at 20 years old than most people do an entire one. You learn more in that amount of time than most. That it's supposed to take a lifetime to learn that stuff, to get that regiment down, to be the better person, to be the betterment of everybody else. It's almost like God threw your whole life in front of you, right down on top of you, and then you have to go through life as an example. I bag my life up. I mean, still do the same routines every single morning from the time I wake up to the time I go to bed. That's how I have to do it, to get up and down. How do you? I mean, starting in the morning, which you got to tell yourself something. You got to say something to yourself. You go to a certain spot. That's the way I do it. People always ask me, like, man, how do you get through? What do you do this? How'd you get there? I'm like, literally, it's a second-by-second routine. And if any part of my day something jumps in front of it, then I'll deal with that. But then I have my routine so I know where to go back to.
Yeah. So when I wake up in the morning, right, you know, it's, I guess the first challenge, right? It's like, I got to get out of my bed and get into my wheelchair, and I do it by myself. Right. I always want to remain as independent as I can. And so I actually figured a way to get out of my bed. The way it works is my wheelchair, it's a little bit higher than my bed, right? Which allows me to go from high to low. So I can just, you know, throw myself over into the bed when I'm getting into bed. But then it's like, okay, well, then I'm in my bed. So I'm lower than my chair now. So how do I get out of it? Well, I have a hospital bed. And what I realize is like the feet part, they lift up. And so I use the remote, I lift that up. So now it makes my bed a little bit higher than my chair. And then I slide myself over. And one of the things I do, which is, you know, one of your friends, David Goggins, he talks about, you know, self-talk, that voice inside your head. I do that a lot. I have to, you know, keep pushing and fighting. And I, you know, I'm talking to myself a lot to like motivate myself to overcome whatever I have to come. So like when it comes to getting out of the bed every single morning, you know, I'm telling myself, okay, you know, let's push, come on a little bit more, let's go. And eventually, you know, just get in the chair and then go about my day.
A lot of people think that the hardest part about staying motivated, about the sayings around here, I mean, I have it painted all over the walls, like team never quit, never quit. Like, man, you're missing never quit. It's like, I have to tell myself that every day. Mm. That's why I put pictures up and everything to remind me. That's why I have people around me that they wear it on t-shirts. So when I'm looking at it, it's like, hey, no matter what you're doing, don't ever quit. Mm. And I find that the times that that come along that are easy, no one ever wants to quit. It's actually the times when you wake up in the morning, you're tired, you're sick, and you don't feel like doing it, then you get up and you push yourself. That's where the growth happens. Do you and your brothers, y'all still live around, y'all live together?
Yeah, no, definitely. We you know, I live with my parents, and we live all together, and yeah.
So what's your day-to-day operation like? What do you do for everyday business?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of depends on the day, but, you know, generally, so I wake up, and then, you know, kind of, like I said, just kind of depends on the day. You know, sometimes I have media to do. Like today I was up at 4 a.m. Doing an interview with this news agency or whatever. And then, you know, if it's not doing that, then it's, you know, working on business stuff, working on my nonprofit or book related stuff, you know, responding to emails. It's just kind of general business type of stuff. And then the other days, you know, I go to physical therapy. I do a workout there, very intense, for 2 hours. One's with occupational therapy, and that's, you know, like my upper body, arms and stuff like that. The other's, you know, the physical therapy, and that's going to be like, you know, my core and legs and stuff like that. You know, I try to exercise throughout the week to maintain what I have and to stay flexible. And then we always have, you know, a family dinner together, and that's really nice. You know, I eat dinner with my parents and my brothers, and that's just really great. So it's kind of this, depends on the day, but I try to stay as busy and productive as possible and just keep moving forward.
Well, yeah, because I mean, your books write themselves. I mean, you're a living motivational book. Every day that you have to get up, I'm serious. It's like, all you have to do is have a manual right there by your chair and write about your day and then print that stuff out and people will read it. And I'm not kidding. That's the way. I mean, Goggins and all of our guys who you say have that mental, that inner monologue, right? Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people are thrown into hospitals and given medication to get rid of those. I mean, they say there's, you know, they're schizophrenics or psychopaths, and I mean, yeah, that does exist. But then there's some of us down here, man. Those voices are those motivational things. It's like people that you hear, you recognize their voice. They say certain things that when you're in certain times and you're going through certain emotions, when you hear that voice, everything switches on. You're like, oh, all right, I know where I'm at. I know exactly where I'm at if that dude's talking to me, right? That's how we have to stack it. And that's why they're there. That's why God puts them there. I mean, and every day you get up and to start your day, you know, you're going there is different than everybody else. That in itself is tough. But the motivation that you have to keep pushing, that'll do nothing but grow. That's all you can do is just keep growing. And think about it like that. We don't get weaker, we get stronger. You don't get battle weakened, you get battle hardened. Mm. I mean, everything is for a reason. Even your vessel that you got put into. If you got put into the one that's to sharpen your mind, then that's the burden you have to carry. And it's not a burden, actually. That in itself is a gift. It's like, because somebody else had to carry this and go through that to earn that, to learn that. But people like yourself, you got to be around, man. I have to be able to see something to be like, man, no matter what I think I got, he's got something too. And he's taking that hit. I mean, Elijah's got that one for us. That's how we look at it. That's how I look at it. That motivates me and I hope it motivates you. Like, man, you need to get your ass up out of bed because I need something to look at. I need something to keep me going. Don't think for one second that's not the case. I don't care if you're young or not. A lot of times, some of the best motivation comes out of you young ones. Because y'all don't even know what you're getting yourself into yet. You just don't even know, but you keep going.
You make it seem so easy, though, Elijah. So it couldn't have always been that easy. When you first kind of got the news and you were first kind of getting into it, I'm sure a lot of things changed when you got into the wheelchair at school and relationships, friendships. How did you handle that moment?
Yeah, I mean, there's different stages. Like, so when I was officially diagnosed when I was six, you know, I didn't really think too much of it. I just thought, well, now I have a name to the problem. Like, I can tell people, you know, this is why I walk on my toes. Like, I didn't really think too much of it. I didn't know it was coming, right? When I was 11, you know, going in the wheelchair, that really shook me up. Like, I remember the first day, it really shook me up. I didn't, you know, I don't like special attention. I don't want people to feel sorry for me. I hate when people feel sorry for me, right? I'm not into that thing. And I remember this little kid, you know, we're all fourth graders, whatever. We walk outside the classroom because they wanted me to still walk a little bit to try and maintain as much strength as I could. So I parked my chair outside the classroom. And when recess began, we go out and he walks past the chair and he says, "Hey, Elijah, is that yours?" And that really broke me a little bit right there because, you know, I didn't want to, I was basically having to admit now and accept reality that, yeah, that's mine. When the wheelchair was first delivered to our house, I would walk past it every single day on my tippy toes. And I would say, I'm not going to use it. And I was determined, like I was never going to use this chair. I was talking, you know, some crap to my parents and like, I'm never going to use this thing. I don't even know why you guys got it. I'm going to walk forever, you know, because I'm just stubborn like that. I'm stubborn on wanting to do what people say I can't do, you know, in a positive way. And then when I was 15, that's when I learned everything that's going to come with this disease. When I was 15, I was at a fundraiser for Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And I'm looking through this booklet, you know, waiting for the fundraiser to start. And I'm looking through this booklet, and at the end of the booklet, it talks about Duchenne. And it talks about it's a muscle wasting disease, and it's okay, nothing new. And then it says that most patients lose their ability to walk at 11, nothing new. You know, I'm sitting in my wheelchair reading this. And then it mentions that patients will lose mobility in their arms. And I thought, well, no, like, I can't imagine that. Like, that sounds terrible, right? You know, someone that's really into, like I said, throwing the football around, playing catch with my friends, playing basketball. I couldn't imagine that. But then it got worse. I keep reading. And then it says that most patients pass away when they're 25. That's the average lifespan. And I remember just like holding my breath thinking, whoa, like I never thought about dying. Like seriously until this point in my life. And I realized, wait, this disease is fatal. I thought maybe this is a mistake. Maybe this is a mistake. I keep reading it. And it made me accept reality. It said that, well, it attacks the diaphragm, attacks the heart. And, you know, I'm someone that likes to think logically. And I thought, well, that makes sense. If it's a muscle wasting disease, these are muscles, you know, those are going to get wasted away as well. And I thought, well, that's crazy. And then I read the disease is incurable. And to me, I thought, oh, okay. So you're saying it can't be cured. And you know, like I said, I like when people challenge me. I said, okay. And I was getting really interested in business at the time. And I didn't know what I wanted to do yet, but I thought, you know, why don't I start something right now to do something about this? Like, why don't I use my love for business and try and do something to cure this disease? You know, they say I can't do it. Let's see what I can do about it. Let me try and get in here and do things differently. Let me be, you know, the difference. And I thought, you know, why do I have to be old? Like, I never understood, why do you have to be 25 or 30 to do something great? Why can't you be great at 15? And that's, I seriously believe that. And so I later went on that day, and like the next week I started a nonprofit. You know, I got all the legal paperwork. I got the board of directors. Got all the people together, started coming up with branding, created the logo myself, created, you know, the social medias, everything, and just started putting things together. And as time went on, it's becoming a more and more established organization. But that's how the organization came about. But that's kind of how I handled Duchenne throughout my life, you know, different stages. I took it differently. But nowadays, the way I'm taking it is like, I see this as something bigger than just having a disease. I see this as an opportunity to help everybody else with their adversity, because everybody has some type of adversity. And I'm someone that really believes that adversity is an opportunity, right? To improve your character. And I believe your character is the most important thing that you have, because you need character under any circumstance. If you're healthy, you need good character to use it well. If you're not in good health, you need good character to endure all the challenges you're going to have with it. If you're rich, you need good character to be a good steward of your money. If you're poor, you need, you know, good character to get through it, through the tough financial times. So like, good character is good under all circumstances. So someone should really prioritize their character. And I think really the best way to improve your character or to exercise it is adversity. So I see this whole disease and the situation I'm in is something much bigger than just the disease, but I see it as like something to help everybody just become a better, you know, version of themselves that's just tougher, stronger, and more resilient.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, buddy. Well, you're definitely a prime example of what it's like to live the life that you're born into. Because a lot of people try to get they're born into a life that they don't want to live in it.
Mm.
They try to get out of it. But remember, man, you picked this before you came down here. Like, I'll go into that, Elijah. Your namesake says a lot about you. I don't know if you know the history on that name, but you're straight up badass. If you're carrying one of them titles, right? It's like I picked that to go in there to show you how much you can get done in that amount of time. Our brightest stars, they shine. They leave the most indelible memories on us, man. When they go early, some stars shine. They burn out early. Some last. Some of us have to stay down here for a long freaking time before we get anything right, and we can leave something behind. Serious. It's the spirit that's born inside of you. The vessel's one thing, man. It's just look at it in a reverse cycle. Whatever's burning inside of you is so freaking tremendous and hot and burns with such a fury that it eats your body up. That's how you have to look at it. It's in that capacity, because it goes the other way with other people. Sometimes their body will eat up on the inside. I mean, it's everything's different. We're all different. No one's as, I mean, everyone is as unique as their fingerprint. No one's the same height, same color, anything like that, man. I mean, we have similar paths, but different. And as you're going through it, I mean, at the rate you're going, I mean, look what you've accomplished. Like I said, it's amazing. It's almost that pressure in itself, like a diamond's formed through coal. It just keeps squeezing and squeezing and squeezing you, man. And that's basically what's happening to you. Your soul and the inside of you, man, it's just getting pressurized. It's getting squeezed. And every time that happens, man, you get brighter and brighter and smarter. So no, I mean, it's easy to, and people, I tell you what the worst thing is, it's the people we run into. Because sometimes they don't understand what's going on the inside, so they just see the outside and they're like, man, I feel sorry for everything that you're having to go through. I'm like, don't be. I'm past that. We already passed the pressure zone, right? Once that mind breaks open and you start pushing and thinking, then everything I have to go through up until the time I leave is worth it. We're all on the clock. We're all on it. The minute you check it, the minute you're born, you got to learn how to live while you're dying. We're all going through that.
Mm.
You know, and service to your fellow man is the rent you pay to live on earth. However long you're down here. And don't think for one second, man, everything that you're having to go through teaches somebody. Like, when we put this thing out on the net, man, it puts it into perspective. And you can't appreciate it. You never can appreciate how hard and your life has been and what it teaches everybody else. That's the thing that gets overlooked. That's the thing. Most things teachers don't tell you that. You know, it's hard to hear that. But the minute someone tells you you're not the right person for this job, that's how you know you're in the right spot. It's almost as if it's the magic word, like please and thank you. You throw those out, and then that one's the one you want to hear too. Like, you ain't the right person for this job. All right, cool. I know I'm in the right spot because I can earn my way up and learn. So every day that you get up, man, you keep pushing with that. Never stop. Because you got your siblings. You said he's 14 years old?
Yeah, my brother Kai is 14 years old.
What's he want to do?
What's the other one do, you said?
Yeah, what's he want to do? What's he doing?
Oh, what's he want to do? I'm not sure yet. I mean, he's in middle school. He's real, you know, into art and stuff like that. He likes to play video games, you know, just a typical 14-year-old.
Oh, yeah.
But that's how he is.
Y'all get along?
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. We talk all day. He's always asking me questions. He always likes to pick my mind. I'm someone that's real philosophical and like ask questions and into that type of thing. So he's always asking me questions. And what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And, you know, and I love to teach him. And I see myself as like a leader to him, right? Like, I had to go through this disease first, And so I get to teach him all the stuff that I'm learning and how to view it and the certain mindsets that he needs to develop so that he can go through it as well. And I think honestly, he's handling it great. I mean, he's so positive. He never even talks about the wheelchair. He doesn't feel sorry for himself. He doesn't really.
Oh, that's because you don't. That's because you don't.
Yes.
That's what that is. Absolutely. You got something to look up. If somebody's carrying the same thing you are and they're whatever direction they're carrying it, you'll follow it, especially in the beginning. I do have this question. Has he managed to have a skill set or figure out something, some way to do something a lot easier and cooler than you did? Because that's usually a thing. When you pass down a skill set, they modify it a little bit to make it better. Is he doing that yet?
Because
the tricks are the best. Everyone has a trick for something. I've kind of figured that out, man. Yeah. Like there's the common routine and then there's the way you modify it.
I don't know if he's done anything new, but I mean, all my tricks of like using gravity to, you know, get high to low. He's perfected that, which is great because that allows you to be super independent. I mean, with the bathroom, with the shower, with getting out of bed, you know, complete independence there. So he's mastered that pretty good. So that's great that he's done that.
Well, I mean, I never heard it said like that, but it made me think that's true, man. Because the way you have to use angles, the way you maneuver around and the way you have to get the up and down and things that you can't, the angles that you have to use are completely different from somebody who has to use legs, right? Because you're on the wheels all the time. It's kind of like driving a car and trying to go in the cupboard at the same time and do stuff, yeah?
Yeah.
If you don't mind me asking you this, the other brother you lost, did you lose him from DMD?
Yes, Max. So Max was 14 when he passed away. He officially, he was officially, you know, passed away from Duchenne. But Max had other health complications as well. I mean, when he was born, he had open heart surgery because there was something wrong with his heart and they wanted to repair it. And the surgery had like a 99% success rate or something like that. Nothing bad should have happened, but it did. And it led to him being cognitively delayed. It led to him being blind, not able to speak, needing a feeding tube. And he was basically confined to his bed his whole life. So he had a full-time nurse and stuff like that. And I grew up with him. So, I mean, we'd be going to the hospital, I mean, many times a year. And I'd be, you know, up all night till like 5 a.m. sleeping in the car while my parents went inside taking care of him. And so I'd be with my brothers in the car, you know, just trying to, you know, be good children because, you know, they're dealing with our brother who's possibly dying right now. And I mean, there's a lot of moments where Max like basically almost died, but didn't. And so, you know, that's kind of my childhood is constantly going in and out of the hospital, not just for me, but for my other brothers. And it's like true emergencies. Like I remember sometimes being asleep, right? I'd be asleep and I'd hear like these weird voices. And I'm like, that voice doesn't sound familiar. You know, that don't sound like my brothers or my parents. And then I'd hear like the, you know, like the machines or whatever, like the, in like what paramedics have. And I realized, oh wait, my paramedics are here to take Max to the hospital again. So, you know, that what that meant to me is, all right, let's get up. Let's go. Let's get in that chair. Like, it's time to go. Like, you know, we got to move because like every second counted with Max. He was very critical, very, very severe. So, you know, we had to move. And that happened a lot. That was really frequent.
What are your parents' names?
My dad's name is Bill and my mother's name is Kelly. And I must add, my dad is a huge fan of yours. So
we have to nominate them for sainthood, man.
Exactly. They're saints.
I mean, you want to talk about,
absolutely,
like,
I was thinking the same thing.
Not to take anything away from you, bro, but I mean, what great parents, right?
No, absolutely. They're amazing. I mean, seriously,
tell them I said hello, man. And thanks for putting the work in. And yeah, thank you too, man. While we're doing that, but seriously, that's the whole time you're telling me that I didn't. A lot of death runs with me. We're like partners. Everything dies around me eventually too. So I mean, I kind of have an insight onto that. And to go through that at a young age is tough. Like your brother probably needs you more than you can even imagine. I know you need him, and parents, you know, they need all. You know, you kind of, it's a family dynamic like that. And sometimes they can separate you, but most of the other times it always brings you all together. I mean, in those moments, I mean, that's when your greatest strengths come out. So tell them, man, thanks for from this side to y'all that for going through that. Like I said, not many people can. A lot of people give up. Like if anybody deserved to be on Team Never Quit, man, it's y'all.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? I mean, we got you now. Like I said, I got your file right here. You can't go anywhere. I know where you live. And although I may be the slowest runner on planet Earth, I can still get to you.
Elijah, what has y'all's nonprofit been able to accomplish? I mean, you started it when you were 15, roughly, and you're 20 now, so it's been around for 5 years, give or take. What have you guys been able to accomplish so far?
Yeah, so one of my major priorities from the start was to bring awareness to this disease and make it more well-known, but more importantly, more cared about, right? And so that's really where my main focus has been, is bringing that awareness to it, because most people don't even know what the disease is. They never heard of it. And so really what I'm trying to do is get people to care about the disease. And then I think money will follow to advance gene editing and gene therapy into human practice. That's something I'm really, really passionate about, really excited about. We did help make a donation one time to science to do a study with relating to gene editing and gene therapy, which was pretty cool. But you know, I want to do a lot more. My main focus has been that awareness. And right now what I'm trying to do is make this disease a mainstream known disease. So thank you guys for, you know, having me on your podcast. This is, helps bring awareness to the disease, hopefully motivate and inspire people as well with their adversity, but helps bring awareness to this disease. And I'm hoping to get on other podcasts and other TV shows and whatever, just anywhere that I can get a platform to talk about all the things I'm talking about today and bring awareness to this disease. That's really what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to be like the Magic Johnson, but for Duchenne. You know, Magic Johnson, he got rid of AIDS. Yeah,
Magic. That's Magic Johnson. You know what I mean? Right? That dude, that's brilliant.
Yeah, it's inspiring to me that, you know, that's just one man, and look at what he was able to do for that. And so I'm hoping that I can be that same type of person, but with Duchenne. And I feel like, you know, I'm trying to use my talents and skills to best serve the Duchenne community and try and make a real difference there. So what I want to see at the end of the day is the disease cured. And I think that we're really, really close to doing that. You know, I talk to scientists all the time. You know, we're really, in my opinion, entering the golden age of medicine. You know, I mean, you're talking about being able to edit your DNA, right? And so it's like all these genetic diseases, not just the shin, you know, it's basically the cause of a spelling error. And if we can edit it like it's a Word document, you know, we can basically cure any genetic disease. And that's just fascinating to me. And so I'm trying to do everything I can in my power to help accelerate that process and get it here faster so we could save people's lives.
Have you taken stem cells?
I have not taken stem cells, no.
Have you looked into that?
I have looked into it. I think it's very interesting. I know some people with Duchenne that have done that, but I don't know enough about it, you know, to make a...
I was just curious as the correlation, if they have been introduced to that or not.
Yeah, I think stem cells, personally, you know, I'm not a scientist, but personally, I think that one day we'll be able to use stem cells to repair muscle loss. So all the muscle loss that we have.
Oh, sure. They're already doing that. There's some. First of all, if we can watch it on TV, like if someone can think it up, like if we can imagine it, we'll create it. That's the beautiful thing about being human. If we can come up with that in our heads, then that's the blueprint. And that's already out there. And you see that for the way they repair us military guys. I'm titanium on the inside. My guys that missing arms and legs, it's just a matter of time before those prosthetics are back and make them twice as strong. What usually gets broken is the mind and the spirit. That they think if they miss something else that it takes away from everything else, but it doesn't. It's like, so when you put something back on there and modify it, whatever's wearing, it's going to modify it good or bad. And I heard a lady say, I was at a TED Talk one time. I think it was a TED Talk. Anyway, it's not important. But anyway, she said, technology will never be as slow as it is right now. This is a long time ago, and that's true. It just keeps speeding up. It gets faster and faster and faster. And when I was a kid, I remember, the futuristic Star Trek. If you could talk to your buddy on your watch as a communicator, you knew you were in the future. That was outer space stuff. I didn't even have one of those watches, and we already have those. You can pick up that iPhone. My kid can touch a picture and it'll show up at the door when I open it. When I open the door, it's sitting right there. That's our utopia. That's our paradise. When I was a kid, that's what I thought it would be like. It's here. I live in it. You younger ones were born into it, so you can't appreciate it, which means whatever's coming down the road for y'all is unbelievable. It's just a matter of how y'all put it together, and my generation's got to keep y'all's ass in line. Because y'all, I'm not kidding, man. I watch the younger generation, and the COVID babies are completely different. Them suckers can climb up walls. I mean, it's unbelievable. They're already smart at four. So I'm excited to see what y'all do. You're an example of what's coming. That thing that you got strapped with, man, that burden you have to carry, will not only does it cripple most people, but it cripples the person and what they carry. It didn't do that to you because you're different. Yeah, it can't break your mind or your spirit, man. And that in itself is an example should be an example to everybody older than us what's coming. If you got the guy that have to go through that burden carrying that responsibility with this kind of motivation, stand by.
Elijah, I hate to put you on the spot here, but what's your greatest piece of never quit advice for the listeners?
Yeah, well,
you should write a book about.
Yeah, you should write a book about it.
Like Mornings with Elijah, Coffee with Elijah. What do you? Hey, bro, tell me about your day so I'll know that I'm having a good. You know, I get up and move my ass.
Well, I'll tell you this, right? Because I feel like every day is, you know, never quit day. But I have a story specifically, I think. And that is actually the title of the book, A Small If, right? So what happened was when I was 16 years old, my spine was starting to become more and more curved. And my doctors wanted to put a metal rod into my back to correct the scoliosis, right? And I didn't want that surgery. That sounds terrible. And so I remember going to my doctors and I get off the x-ray table. We look at the x-ray and he's telling me, yeah, you know, at this point, like I'm going to have to really advocate today that you're going to have the surgery. And I'm like, well, no, I don't know. And then he's talking, you know, okay, we'll do it during the summertime to avoid the flu season or whatever. So, you know, he's getting specific. He's talking about the doctors and stuff that the team will have. And I'm like, okay, he's serious. And I look over to my left. My mom is crying. You know, my doctor hands her a tissue. I look at my dad. He's got his head down. That's what he does when he's sad. And I'm sitting here smiling because I'm not accepting this at all. You know, I'm not having this surgery. So I'm going back and forth with my doctor and it's not really going anywhere. And then I asked him, I said, well, you know, if I was somehow able to reverse the current state of my spine, could I avoid having to have the surgery then? And he said, well, look, you know, it's never been done before. He's never heard of anybody doing it. He said, it's basically medically impossible. He doesn't want to give me any false hope. And he said, you know, as your doctor, I got to really put my foot down and advocate for you to have the surgery. But he says, because I know you and your character, I will give you a small if. And I thought, there it is. It's all I need to hear.
Bam, right there. Yeah.
And so he says, okay, small if. So I said, you know, let's go to physical therapy or whatever. So he signed, you know, he writes me a prescription, physical therapy, whatever. And so for the next 3 months, I would go to physical therapy and I would work like crazy. I mean, sometimes they'd be stretching me on the mat. And it would hurt so bad. You know, I mean, they're pulling really tight muscle. They're literally pulling my back to strain.
It's like being on the rack, right?
Yeah, they put me on this machine and you know, keep my eyes sick. I've been sitting since I was 11. That would make me basically like stand up in some sense. And that really pulls things up and they kind of hurt. But I would just bite down on my shirt and suck up the pain because I wanted to reverse my back and avoid the surgery more than I cared about the pain in the moment. Like that was my motivation. That's what I was telling myself the whole time there. So no, we're going to do this. And I'm also the type of guy, I call it rocket fuel in my book, that if somebody doubts you and they say you can't do it and you believe you can, that's free motivation. That's free motivation to go after it and to get it done. Like I love when people doubt me and they say you can't do it. It's like, oh, let's bet on it. I'm going to go do it now. Like you're giving me free motivation.
Sure, sure.
So
you know what that means, right? That means they can't do it.
You're right. No, people.
If you're not aware of that, that's they can't do it. That's the doubt. That's where it comes from because it's not in you. And I have people say all the time, they're like, "Hey, man, you can't do that." I'm like, "No, you can't. I can." there's a huge difference. I always know that. The minute someone says, "Man, you can't," I was like, "Well, that obviously means they can't."
I love that. I love it. That's true. No, people always project their insecurities.
Absolutely, it's the first thing out of their mouth.
Yeah.
Never forget that. Write it down if y'all didn't know it. That's a true statement.
No, it's true. It's true. And I mean, people have been doing that to me, you know, my whole life saying, oh, you can't do this or that. You're in a wheelchair or whatever. And it's like, well, you probably couldn't do it because you're not, you know, because you couldn't do it if you were in a wheelchair, but don't mean I can't. Right. So, but anyways, with the story, right. With my spine, not only that, like, you know, I was doing everything I could to try and get my spine to be straighter. I mean, I even taught myself how to cook because I thought, well, losing weight and trying to slim down would relieve some of the pressure off my back. So I,
what's the inversion? Like, I'm sorry to interrupt, but just out of curiosity, like an inversion table, where your feet are clamped in the. I have one in the thing right now.
Yeah.
Where you swing upside down. Have you seen that inversion chair? You lay on it, your feet's clip, you flip clip into it.
I think
it
I know what you're talking
swings
about.
Upside down, it stretches your spine out. Do they do that? Do you do that during physical therapy?
No, we didn't do anything like that. It was more just like, you know, laying on the mat or like this, like, I don't know how to explain. It's like this training that like pulls you up. Those are like the two main things I did. And then a lot of core strengthening and stuff like that. Cause it was like, got to strengthen those muscles to strengthen my spine. That was our theory at least.
Are the muscles, are they contracting and contorting your spine? Or is it just deteriorating and like something when it deteriorates, it folds up?
It's more the deterioration.
Okay, check. All right, roger that. So the stretching and all that just activates it, but it doesn't really stop it from the deterioration from happening.
Right, that's true. But, you know, the muscles that are still there, like, you know, they could be, you know, strained now and maybe strengthened, and that could be enough to make it, you know, straighter than
okay, so there is still life in them. It's just the atrophy is stronger than the growth cycle. And if you oh, wow.
That's what I think.
Okay, I understand.
You know, I don't want to, you know, speak too much on the science because I don't know.
No, but that kind of makes sense. So the power that's going against it is stronger than what the muscles are normally used day-to-day activity to stay healthy. Mm-hmm. So you would have to, basically you'd have to work out three times as hard just to have a normal life because the atrophy eats it up so fast.
Right. And then that's the thing about working out too. Like, you know, a lot of people work out because they want to look good and I want to impress somebody or whatever. And that's fine. That's fine. You know, I'm all about being healthy or whatever. But like when it comes to the shin, it's like I kind of don't have a choice. I have to work out to survive, stay alive, keep going.
And then health and everything else is a byproduct of it, of the good looks and all that come with it. Most people. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. But I guess I taught myself how to cook, you know, to lose weight or whatever. So like, you know, you would see me in the kitchen driving my wheelchair in one hand, carrying the pan in the other hand, and literally stirring up, you know, like chicken and rice and like asparagus and like all this. So I meal prep. So I'd, you know, make that or whatever. I hung a picture of my spine, my crooked spine on my wall. So I would see it every morning when I wake up, I'd look at it and I'd say, yeah, you know, I'm visualizing this being straighter. Right. And, you know, it kind of set the tune for the day. Like, this is what I need to do. Like, this is like the type of mindset I got to be in. I got to be focused on this. And so I worked really hard for 3 months, ended up going to my doctors and we did the x-ray and I was confident that it was straight. Like, I was like very, very confident that I pulled it off. And so I got off the x-ray table and I mean, I wish I could have seen myself because I probably was looking different that day in the doctor's office because I was like fired up. You know, remember, I'm raised by a head football coach. So, you know, I had like that athlete mindset in me of like, you know, like someone like Kobe Bryant or someone like Michael Jordan, like just intensity. Like, you know, I'm going to
like, shout out to Kobe. I'd like to throw out another shout out to Kobe as well. I love that, man. Yeah. Rest in peace, brother.
And so anyways, I go into the room, the doctor comes in, he looks at the x-ray and my spine is straighter. And so he gives me a knuckle. He's like, yeah, you pulled it off. You did it. And that was it. And so like, all I needed was a small lift. I just needed that possibility. You know, I just needed to know, yeah, it's possible. And that there was an option. If there's an option two, I'm going to make option two work.
Well, that's the option. That becomes the option.
Yeah.
Never forget that. I mean, I can freaking rod around like that. It goes up my spine. It's just like that. I keep these suckers around just to remind me. It also reminds you how hard you are. I mean, you can take that. The best thing and the one thing I love about going into the hospitals, because when team guys get messed up, I mean, when you if you get hurt, you want to get hurt bad enough so you do go into the hospital so you can go see the nurses, the ninjas. God, we love them, man, when they start patching you up. There's nothing like it, really. Sometimes, you put out so hard that when you do get hurt, when you go for the ride and you go into the hospital and the doc's like, man, look. Like, I've been checking your levels, man. This sucker's out of control. This one's off the charts high. I've never even seen numbers like this. You're like, great, new standard. Write it freaking down, okay? Because this is the type of man that does that. You're the type of man that sets that standard. When the dog's like, nah, you can't do that. You can't straighten your spine. All right, I'm going to go out and do it. So the next dude comes in here behind me like my little brother, don't tell him that he's going to die or he's not going to be able to live because all that comes from the doctor who's telling you that. You should run across some of them team guy docs we have, man. They'd be like, suck it up. You're going to live. Don't worry. Make a good one. That kind of thing. Any doctor that tell you you can't do something, there'll be one out there that can't tell you that you can. And then there'll be an example of it, of what can be done. You're an example of that. I'm sorry. I just had to say that. Keep going.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, I appreciate that. And that's true. You know, a lot of times when people say this or that, you know, like go be that new standard. You know, I love that. I love setting the, you know, things be like, for example, I mean, I'm actually really big on that. Now that I think about it, cause it's like, you know, I'm 20 years old and I'm trying to do great things right now for a 20-year-old. I'm trying to do great things for a disabled person, even though I don't see myself as a disabled person. You know, I recognize I have a disability or whatever.
I told you, you don't have a disability. You have a distinct ability. You have a distinct ability.
I like that. You know, I got to start using that.
Good. It's all yours. I've been saving it for a long time for you to show up. It's all yours.
I'm going to use that. But yeah, no, I set a new standard for what it means, you know, what it means. It's like, what can you accomplish at this age with all the things going against me? What can you do? And I want to set that new standard. I want to show people like, it doesn't really matter. You could still be great no matter what. And so, yeah, but that's my spine surgery. So like my advice there is really what you got to do, you got to first find the possibility that something is possible. Like, so if you're going against a lot of adversity, first figure out how it's possible that you can overcome this, right? And maybe you got to get really creative. Like sometimes it seems impossible to do. You just got to find the small possibility, right? You got to find the small if. And then I think after that, it's like, you got to go work hard and you got to visualize. I think visualizing is something that is really underrated. Like it lets you see and map things out. I mean, you first, you know, create it in your imagination, then you go and create it in reality. You create it twice.
Sure,
right?
Absolutely. 100%. And you manifest it. Yeah. You manifest it, right?
Basically. Right. You know, and I don't mean like, you know, it's some weird woo-woo thing, but more of like, you know, like you just see it. Like I see
that's
myself.
Not weird. That's not a woo-woo thing anyways. Anybody says that's not educated on how it works. That's how we're trained. So if you got that, that's good. I had to go learn that. Mm-hmm. You had that as a gift.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with you. But so you do that and then you got to work really hard too. Cause you know, you gotta put in the effort to do it. And that's what I think I would say to people that are going through a lot of challenge or adversity is like, you know, find the possibility, visualize it, and then go work really hard, and then it'll happen, right? It'll happen.
All right, Elijah, here's the deal on you. Some people have to come down here and be the groundbreakers. Some people have to get put into that life that everyone's suffering in just to see the path out of there. And you just said that, and you're exactly right. And then the work hard part is because there's no trail. Your ass is out there having to clean out all that brush and all the mechanisms and just that manifestation of whatever's in your head, whatever you're seeing, you're only seeing pieces of it right now, apparently. And that's by design because you're 20. First 40 years of your life, man, they're the hard part. So if you condense yours up, it's like, man, you're here for a short amount of time or a long amount of time, but whatever, however long you're here, you're cutting the path for everyone to fall in behind you to get to solve this issue. Because anybody who says they're wanting to solve the problem, I'm like, why would you want to solve the problem? Wouldn't it still be a problem? I was like, man, let's fix the damn, you know, or fix the problem. You don't want to fix the problem either. You want to lay the problem out, hear all the variables, and get rid of it to where it's not even around anymore. And the people that do that, then they come in like you do. They don't come in where everybody can see them and everything, man. They come in just like you do, through it. Like, buckle up, man. We're just going to have to go through it. So lead by example. And you're leading so fast, man, they put you on wheels. So do it in style, brother. You know, I mean, we're running in chaos. We're together. You're down here. You're in Team Never Quit because, man, you don't have that in you, obviously. I picked that up quick. So, man, just keep doing what you're doing.
Absolutely. Elijah, what can our listeners do to support you on your journey and kind of what you've got going on?
Yeah, I mean, a great way to help me, you know, you could buy the book, A Small If. It's on Amazon. You could follow me on social media at Elijah J. Stacy. You know, Instagram, Twitter, wherever. And that would be a really great help for people to just get on board or whatever, because like, you know, I'm trying to get my message out there more. I'm trying to get, you know, build that platform out, because really everything I do is like for service to other people. Like I just want to help people and share my message of, you know, overcoming adversity, trying to raise funds to cure this disease, things like that. And it's like, you know, I just need a bigger platform, a bigger microphone. And so, you know, building that following and getting people to know my story, you know, reading my book, stuff like that, that'd be a great, great help.
Oh, well, we'll definitely do that. I would like to have one of those signed by you. And here's what, if somehow, some way you could get that, throw some ink on the ground, roll over that with a tire and then roll over the page that you signed for me. So you rolled over that small lift. I've been thinking about that the whole time. That's how I want to know you actually signed it for me. Roll over that sucker with that chair like you're rolling over life.
I will do that.
Will you do that for me?
First.
Yeah, well, hey, man, I'm the weirdest. You can't even believe what I am, man. I come up with some crazy stuff, but when people ask me that, I'll have a great story to tell them, and I'll tell them about you for sure. And, man, we'll do everything we can to get this thing out there, especially to our team, and then they'll definitely cover down on our end, man. But thanks for coming in and telling us about yourself. And check in, man. We'll check in with you. If you need anything from our end, if we can be any help, please don't hesitate.
I appreciate that so much. Thank you so much for having me today.
You bet, man. God bless you.
Have a good day, man.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you guys for listening to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. If you liked today's episode, make sure to share it with a friend. Make sure you guys support Elijah, everything he's got going on. What an incredible story. And he is just kind of early on in his story at only 20 years old. If you haven't already, make sure you have subscribed on YouTube, where every single week we drop the episodes in video format. We are almost up to 100,000 subscribers. I'm hoping to hit that goal very soon. We hope you guys can come back next week and listen to another episode. Until next time, never quit.